Welcome to Middle School Matters podcast number 663, making the lunch ladies cry. We've got some jokes for you. We're going to make some lunch ladies cry today. And we got some other resources for your classroom. So without further ado, here's the wonderful, the magnanimous, the Mr. Troy Patterson.
All right, welcome back to the show. I am Troy Patterson, and with me is the world's greatest co-show host, Mr. Sean McGurr. Hey, Sean.
Well, hello there. How are you?
I am doing well. How are you?
I am doing pretty. You know what? I'm excited because there's like 8.5 days left in the year, I think.
Yeah, I don't know how many days there are left, but I know that we are getting close. I think we have a little bit longer. I do. It's always funny because it's like I was driving into work on Friday and there was like this big sign that said parking and with an arrow this way. And okay. It was just in the park, you know, in the park. And I'm like, I wonder what event they're having. Why are they putting parking signs out? And I drove up and was like, wait a minute. Memorial Day is coming up. Hold on. If Memorial Day is coming up, I have Monday off of work. So I'm not really a counter at all in any stretch of the imagination. And I found out I had Monday off, so I have a long weekend. I'm presuming you have a long weekend as well.
Yeah, and we save our comp day for the Friday before, so I had Friday off too. So I have Friday and Monday, so I've got a long weekend. I really enjoyed my Friday. I went around and got a whole lot done that I wouldn't normally have time to do and ran some errands around town. And yeah, it was good.
That's cool. That's cool. I spent Friday working on a project that I didn't really want to be working on, but it is what it is. It comes with the territory sometimes. So, and it was a weird week for me because I worked on Monday. I had a medical follow-up thing from the thing before on Tuesday, so I was kind of off on Tuesday. I was able to, it was outpatient, so I was able to get home, and I did some work stuff from home. And then Wednesday worked, and Thursday was a student conference. I'll talk a little bit about that when we get to the report from the front lines. And then Friday was a work day. So it's kind of a weird, kind of on, off, on, offish. Kind of thing. And then next week is a 4-day week, as I found out on Friday. So, yeah. So, hey, you know, I like to quiz you to start out.
You do.
What is the leading cause of dry skin?
Leading cause of dry skin? I don't know. The TV and the drug companies say it has something to do with like eczema and stuff like that. So what's the real answer?
Towels.
Oh, towels.
Yeah. According to the BMI chart,
okay,
I need to grow a lot taller.
Yeah, it's the story of my life, too.
Just a little quick thought here. If Watson isn't the most famous doctor in the world, then who is?
That's true. That's true. And you're delving into some British humor here on this
there
one.
There you go. Yeah, that's absolutely correct. Yes. I guess we should have a new section, British humor. I have a friend who finds it fascinating, who finds fastening two pieces of metal together to be riveting.
Oh, I bet.
That is true.
Yeah.
I have another friend who was teaching creative writing class in prison.
Really?
Yeah, it had its pros and cons.
Oh, sure.
Creative writing. Diet day one. I have removed all the bad food from my home. It was delicious.
Oh, yeah. best diet ever.
Yeah, that's how it goes. And then finally, a good night to everyone, except people who use various color fills in spreadsheet rows without telling anyone what it means.
There you go. Yeah. There you go.
I can't tell you how, because I think you know this, I end up doing a lot of spreadsheet support. Mm-hmm. Because people do a lot of things manually. I'm like, you know, you can automate that so that it just happens. And so I end up doing a lot of support that. And it's always fascinating to me that people love colors, which is cool. I understand that. But it's like, well, what does this color mean? And sometimes there's a real roundabout answer. And I'm like, how about if we tell people what the colors mean? Oh, everybody knows. Yeah. No. All right. Let's see here. Let's flit around a little bit and give you the buzz.
Ooh. All right.
Yeah, because this week on the Middle School Science Minute, Dave mm-hmm. Bidlowski has a wonderful, nice little citizen science project here involving mm-hmm. bees and bumblebees.
Oh.
So you don't want to get stung Mm-mm. not participating.
That's right.
You don't want to get stung if you are participating either. You want to watch. Be wise. But... I'll stop the puns and just turn this over to the wonderful Mr. Dave Bidlowski and the Middle School Science Minute.
Hi, this is Dave Bidlowski of K12Science.net, and this is your K-12 Science Podcast. I was recently reading the May-June 2025 issue of Science Scope, a magazine for middle school science teachers published by the National Science Teaching Association. And I read the section Citizen Science, written by Jill Nugent. And she wrote an article entitled Participate in Pollinator Science This Season with Bumblebee Watch. And she wrote, spring and summer serve as a rewarding time for students to survey pollinator biodiversity. In fact, the month of June is known as Pollinator Month and even includes a dedicated week known as Pollinator Week, making this a natural time of the year to incorporate pollinator science in your classroom. Part of genus Bombus, North American bumblebees, are special pollinators. They are a diverse group consisting of over 250 species with amazing adaptations and behaviors. For example, bumblebees are better able to fly in cooler weather than other bees. They exhibit sonication, also known as buzz pollination, where they shake and vibrate at a high frequency to loosen pollen from flowers. And species in this genus have favorite flowers and show preferences for certain types of flowers. Needless to say, they are fascinating insects that play an important role in healthy ecosystems and in agriculture, where they pollinate crops such as blueberries, tomatoes, and peppers. Bumblebee Watch is a collaborative project focused on tracking North American bumblebees. The project has a number of partners, including the Zara Society for Invertebrate Conservation and Wildlife Preservation, Canada. Bumblebee Watch is designed to engage participants in the study and conservation of bumblebees, and it provides learners with a unique opportunity for authentic, hands-on science as students learn about the critical role of bumblebees in the environment. They also gain experience in meaningful research where they directly contribute to bumblebee conservation biology. So the project goal is to help track and conserve North America's bumblebees. The task of students is to take photos of bumblebees observed in our areas and share them online. And the most appropriate science discipline is life science and environmental science. To get started with Bumblebee Watch, first sign up for an account on the project website. And the project website is www.bumblebeewatch.org. Following this, you'll be able to begin submitting observations. In planning ahead for observations, it is helpful to locate an optimal outdoor site, such as school grounds, a local park, or garden, for observing bumblebees in action. As an option, students can also take photographs of bumblebees that they observe at home or outdoors during out-of-class time. Bumblebees are relatively easy to recognize since they are large-bodied, fuzzy bees with black and yellow coloration. They are dependent on flowers as their food source from spring to fall. So sites with flowers will provide an excellent habitat site to conduct observations. As the bees navigate from flower to flower, students will delight in seeing the bumblebees carry pollen in their paired pollen baskets located on the bees' hind legs. The project platform provides invaluable resources to support engagement as well as extensions for additional classroom research. For example, when uploading bumblebee photos, the website provides an exemplary online field guide to assist in species identification. Additionally, each observation submitted is reviewed and verified by helpful experts, making for a rewarding and collaborative science experiment. The accuracy of data is important to the overall scientific efforts. So the only materials will be needed are an outdoor space to conduct observations, a digital camera to take pictures, and access to internet connectivity to submit data. Again, for more information, visit the website for the project at www.bumblebeewatch.org. And this has been your K-12 Science Podcast.
It's going to be a buzzy show. Hey, it's time for an update.
Okay.
Time for an update on the DHMO project.
Yeah, well, we finally got into the stage where we go talk to the sixth graders.
Oh, yes.
And as, despite my exhortations to not mug the sixth graders, they did. They mugged the sixth graders. And you could tell the sixth graders are like, what is going on? What? And there's two lunches of sixth graders. And so we kind of had a break between group one and group two. And I pulled them aside and said, now listen, you're not here to attack them. You're just here to persuade them. Mm-hmm. But they were so excited to do it. It was hard not to, They couldn't rein in their enthusiasm. They were itching to go and tell them about dihydrogen monoxide. In the process, I had the lunch ladies come up to me and explain to me that each kid only has 15 minutes to eat, and my kids, you know, can't just distract them from eating. And I had to explain to them that these kids can eat and listen to at the same time. They do it all the time with each other, right? But not in their heads, not in their heads. So this is also a lesson on how to make the lunch ladies cry. My assistant principal laughed when she got the complaint. She's like, yeah, okay, yeah. But we have results so far. Now we do have one seventh grade teacher who's asked our kids to come in and talk to our kids about this. So my kids are going to go in on Tuesday and talk to them. So right now, the percentage of the vote is 92% of students voted to ban dihydrogen monoxide. Now it gets better. Because the teacher who's asked my kids to come in has just finished a clean water campaign project for her students in her enrichment class.
Oh, this is I can sense a bit of a wonderful experience for all involved.
And so when my kids get done, I'm going to post the results right on top of all of the posters that her kids put up about clean water.
There you go.
Yep. So stay tuned. I believe we're going to have some drama.
And that's good drama, right? right?
Yeah, because it's going to make the kids think, right? You know, how can you vote to ban it, but then ask for clean it? You know, no, we want cleaner stuff to ban. Yeah.
Cleaner stuff to ban. All right. Well, I did mention that I went with the kids to a conference this week, Thursday. It was the MILTI conference, the Maine Learning Technology Initiative Conference. And this was up at the University of Maine. So I met the kids up there because I'm in between
right.
where I work. So it would have been a couple extra hours of driving for nothing. So I met the kids up there. And it's a lengthy drive for them. But yeah. We took a good number of kids. We had lots of chaperones. I appreciate the people who agreed to go, because some of them were teachers, some of them were not teachers, not classroom teachers, I should say, not classroom assigned teachers, such as me. I'm not a classroom assigned teacher. The conference was really, really well structured. They learned from past conferences. So, like, we had assigned seats, and then our box, we had a box of T-shirts for the kids. They had little voting panels, little thumbs up, thumbs down voting panels. They had their little passport thing with the pencil in there. So it was really well organized. And then we had all of our badges clipped together by chaperone. So you could just hand a chaperone. Theoretically, you could hand a chaperone their set of badges, which would have their kids in it. It was really, really well organized. So that part was really awesome. And they had a welcome kind of thing, which kind of set the stage for the kids. It was kind of an interesting stage setting. That's kind of hard to do, especially when you have, you know, eighth graders. Because, you know, eighth graders are cool and that. And then we had, if you scanned your badge, it went to your schedule. So it was really, you know, like I said, really well organized. And it was like they moved the room of one of our sessions. And I scanned a badge and I was like, oh, hey, kids, we're going across the hall because the room was moved. I don't know why they moved the room. It seemed to be the same size and it was a little too small. they could have used a room just a little bit larger for the number of kids that they had. But yeah, we did an AI and U session, which was really neat. They used Teachable Machine. Have you used Teachable Machine yet?
Not that I know.
It's interesting to teach kids how AI kind of works, and the kids participated. They were on task. They had a good time with it. And basically, what Teachable Machine does is you give it many pictures of two different things, and then you see if it can distinguish between those two things. So it kind of shows the process there, and the kids had a good time with it. The presenter had a whole bunch of like toys and people, so you could grab two toys, and then the kids, of course, did themselves. Can you tell the difference between the two of us, which I thought was on task, And perfectly appropriate, and it was good, you know, for them to go through that process. It's like they were thinking about it, and hey, can it do this? So they were applying knowledge as well. So I thought that was really good. I think we had a little too much time for lunch, but lunch was well organized this year, because last year, like, everybody had lunch at once. This year they split it in half, so we only had half as many kids going through, which was much more efficient. And it worked out really well. The lunch folks there were ready for us, and, you know, they did everything just fine. So that was cool. And it was good. It was a good experience for the kids. I think it's really great experience for them to get out and see a college. I did ask them, like, you know, where are you going to college? And they didn't have like final choices, which perfectly appropriate, right? They're eighth graders. I just want them to be thinking about college, and most of my kids do think about most of the kids do think about college, just from the background there. But one was like, you know, I want to be an interior designer. It's like, perfect. Have a plan right now. You can change that plan. You can change that plan 50 times if you want, but have a plan and that. So it was fun. It was fun to talk to them. It's fun to get their perspective, and, you know, kind of what they were interested in. And again, visiting a college, I think it's just a good experience for kids to get a sense of what college is like. So it was cool. And we got everything handed out, and the sessions, and they had a big closing session. And the closing session was kind of built off of Menti. Mentimeter, the website where you get to pick. That's something that personally I would have liked to have seen something a little different, because I think asking kids multiple choice questions was, I don't know, wasn't the strongest thing that you could do. And it's hard for, you know, it's easy for kids to bail out on that one. And I was thinking, it's like, so what would I have done? And I don't really have an answer yet. So I'm still thinking about how would I have done this. So yeah, but it was a good conference. It was a good experience for the kids. And I think it's really important for kids to get out and go on field trips and conferencey things and all of that. So that was cool. In the pre-show, we also had a discussion about Flint AI, and you said you used Flint AI, and you told me I told you about it, and I was like, really? Because I don't remember that. So what did you do with Flint AI, and what was that around?
So Flint K-12 is an AI program. It's designed to be a tutor for students. So it's not to supplant teaching.
Yeah, that's right. I do remember this now.
And so I thought I would try it out, because I've got some kids who came to me and said, I really need to work on this over the summer. And it's algebra and it's math and it's not my area. I thought, well, there's this tutor I heard about. And then some other kids came up and said, yeah, I need this, that. And I said, well, there's this tutor I heard about. And they're like, well, tell me more. And I'm like, I can't, because I haven't looked at it. So I went and played with it. And it's free to sign up. And for teachers, the first 80 seats are free. By the way, you are the first seat. So technically the first 79 seats are free. Yeah. Student seats, I should say. So I thought, well, I'll try something. So I went in and I said, I want to create, I created a class, and then I created a group within that class. I'm sorry, a room. And then I created my test group, because I'm going to test this with my fourth hour kids. And they said, "What do you want to build?" And I said, "I want to build an assignment." I said, "Great. I need more." And I said, "I want to build an assignment around Elbert Hubbard's essay called A Message to Garcia." It's a wonderful thing about independence, being independent and taking on responsibility to finish a job and going and doing it. And I'm looking at building like this for the beginning of the year. And I said, I want to do it around this essay. And I told it the name, but I didn't give it the essay. Because normally in a chatbot or like ChatGPT, you have to give it this, you know, I'll say, I want to build around this, and you give it the text, right? But I didn't. I didn't put that in there. And I don't know why I didn't. I just didn't. And I said, I want certain things. I want you to focus on the individualism, and I want you to focus around the main character, Lieutenant Rowan. And it came back and said, I know the one you're talking about. Okay, Lieutenant Rowan, we'll make him the main character and ask questions around him. And then it split my screen into two parts. And on my left side was the process of building it. And it went through the process and showed me the process so I could understand what it was doing. And when it got down to the end, it says, you want me to include a summary of the story at the beginning? I said, yes, please do that. So this is, okay, I'm reworking your project here. And then on the right-hand side, it said, click this to sample what the discussion would look like that I'm going to have with your students. And I could click it where it had a discussion with itself, or I could be the response and I could put in manual responses for myself. And being naturally lazy, I said, you just do it. You show me what you think this is going to look like. And then it did. But then when it got down to the end, it gave me a thing across the top that said, so based on these responses, these students had these understandings and they did a good job in these areas. I'm like, well, I kind of like that. Now, there's a whole bunch of pre-made lessons that are free. I should say lessons, assignments, tasks, chats, maybe, that are free. And they're by category. I just looked in social studies. I didn't mess around a whole lot with the other ones. But I kind of like this, because then now I can push it out to my fourth hour kids. And I can say, go have that conversation. And then let's talk. You know, have a pre-conversation. And then come back and let's talk and let's see if that does anything to add breadth or deepen the conversation. And then when you come to me, I know you're going to have questions because it's an AI and it's going to use a certain level of language that you're not used to. Right. And so let's come back and let's have that talk and see what you come up with. So I think about doing that. And then I think this afternoon I'm going to do one on Beowulf. And then push that out to my students and see what happens.
Interesting.
So it seems pretty quick and easy. And really the idea here is to just get the kids starting to think about what they read. Because a lot of them will just look at the text and go, I want to go to the questions. I don't care about the reading. I'm just going to answer the questions. Mm-hmm. And maybe this is where I want to go. I want to test it. I want to try it. So I played with it. And we'll see. We'll see what happens. But you can also say, I want you to ask these questions. And you can put in the questions you want to ask. I didn't. I said, you come up with the questions and center it around these central ideas in the essay. The questions are good. I like the questions a lot.
Interesting.
So, it's just one. But like I said, I'm testing it. And if you want more, I've got a link down in the later in the show notes. And you try it and tell us what you think as well, right? You can tell us if it's great or it's a gimmick.
Yeah, so the other – we had a lengthy pre-show discussion over great or gimmick. And this comes from Scott McLeod, who is apparently doing sessions on this. And I thought, oh, that's what I should have done for my next conference suggestion, my next conference session or presentation, my next conference presentation. Because he was doing it specifically in terms of like chatbot, history figure chatbot, great or gimmick. Mm-hmm. And I thought, that's a good way to get teachers to think about, is this a great use of my time? Is this a great use of my instructional opportunities? Or is this a gimmick that isn't going to really make a difference for kids? So for example, you know, the kind of, so for the chatbot, coming up with a variety of assignments or AI usage, and then say, is it great or is it a gimmick? And you could even take, submissions from the session that you were in, right? From the participants, like, how do you use AI? And somebody would give you something specific and you say, okay, is that a great use or a gimmick? And you could talk through the pros and cons of it. And I really like that because I think it's helpful for teachers to think about, is this a good use of my opportunities or is this just a gimmick and should I skip it? Or acknowledge that it's a gimmick and go from there. So Scott McCloud, if you're listening, I plan on stealing this and developing it as just as a way of getting teachers to think about what they're doing and how they're doing it. Not necessarily, I'm not thinking I'm going to have the right or wrong answer, by the way. I think it's the thinking through that's important. And then, of course, we can always ask the chatbot, right?
It's right.
Doing this, is this great or a gimmick? And see what it says.
I wonder if you could do that. And then whose parameters do you set? Because you can say, yeah, based on the works of Rick Wormley, Jack Berkmeyer, Debbie Silver, and Judith Bainan, is this, or, you know, based on the works of Scott McCloud, you know, John Duggar and some others that, you know, pick your authors, pick your, and then it would be fun to see, you know, put it in for this set of middle school authors, then go over here and say, all right, what about, you know, I can't all of a sudden think of his name. The guy who does meta research, and then
Marzano or Hattie.
That's it. Those two. Right. And I wonder if you come up with two different things, like drastically different, not slightly different, but like two different paradigms of answers.
Yeah. And like I said, I think for me, this is a good way to get teachers to reflect and say, okay, is this just a fun thing or is this a thing to help students learn? And again, you use both, but be conscious about what you're using and how you're using it and why you're using it. So sorry, Scott. I may be stealing this one. I don't think I have enough time. I wonder if I reach out to Actim and said, hey, I was thinking. So now I'll do the session. I may work this into part of the session that I'm doing, though. I have to think about it. One thing that I don't have to think about, I can just head on out to, is the social web.
Oh, that's true. Well, and it does have things that you should think about. Like, for example, Susie Dent at Susie_Dent has a word of the day, which is engorgidgeousness, which is a 19th century word for extreme greed at the expense of principles. And we're kind of seeing that with the kids right now. I don't care about my principles. I'm going to go and get that, whatever I have to get that. So there's a word to drop on the kids this week. Rick Wormley has a, in case you missed it, post in Blue Sky. New piece, candid and practical and hopefully useful when our grading philosophies conflict with those of our faculty. And it's focused on principles, but I think it's also a good read for staff because there are staff that have different grading principles within, you know, departments even, or be a great discussion to have as a team. Not saying you have to do anything about it. I'm just saying you should have that discussion so that what, you know, kids have a very similar grading understanding. It makes everybody's life easier when you have that. And other teachers on the team don't get resentful. Well, you can do that. It's easier there than it is here. And this one's the hard one. This is the easy teacher. That, you know, gets rid of that drama with the kids. Renee Corbeil, also on Blue Sky. Alice Stapleton said that she was surprised to find that a professor had used ChatGPT to assemble course materials. quote, he's telling us not to use it, then he uses it himself, unquote, she said. And this is another example. We talked about this last week as well, right? But I think Ella misses the point in that the professor has the discernment and experience to determine where ChatGPT or any other bot, for that matter, is hallucinating. And she's at school to kind of get that training and discernment. And I think there's that disconnect between, you know, students and professors, but the kids are going to do the same thing.
It was an interesting article. And this one got a lot of traction over the last few, days as well. I'm also going to add a link to the article so that you can read the whole article as well. You don't hit the roadblock there, but yeah, so it's interesting. I think it's worth a lot of discussion as well. And, in terms of how are teachers using it? What are they expecting kids to do with it? 'Cause those are going to be conversations that are coming up, right?
Yes. Oh, yes.
Right, wrong, yeah, well, up, down. Those are conversations that are going to be coming up.
I used Perplexity on my machine, and it showed up on my Promethean board. And one of the girls, and I used it in the DHML project. I just needed something that I didn't want to sit and type it, so I just grabbed it really quick. And one of the girls in my class noticed that that's what I had done. And she came up and she goes, "We're watching what you're doing on that screen." She goes, "It looks like we're working, but we're really watching you." Okay. All right. I gotcha. I see. AMLE is now on Blue Sky. AMLE is excited to be launching their account there on Blue Sky. They introduced themselves by saying, "We're the Association for Middle-Level Education, the only international organization of its kind for middle-level educators. AMLE is dedicated to helping middle school educators reach every student, grow professionally, and create great schools." So there's, and I threw in the little graphic that they had, and that's kind of what's happening. I think everybody's kind of wrapping up the year and is busy with everything about the year. So not a whole lot there on the social webs this week. So
did anybody put together a middle school starter pack for Blue Sky? I wonder.
Oh, that's a good question. You know, I didn't look. I can do that.
So Sean is going to put together a middle school starter pack for Blue Sky, which will include AMLE, I'm certain. Can you let me know when it's done so I'll follow your starter pack there?
Well, I'm going to find out if somebody did it first here, and okay. Yeah. It doesn't look like it. No, no.
So Sean will be getting right on that after the show is done. Right, Sean?
Wait, what? After the show's done? What?
All right. I found a couple things that I thought were interesting this week. One of which was 101 Rules of Effective Living by Mitch Horowitz. And there's a lot of these out there. But there were some really interesting ones on this one. I do want to strongly advise you to read through these, and not just pop it up there on the board, because you want to make clear decisions, on the appropriateness for your area, because I will tell you the word sex does occur on line 28 of these. And so you might want to edit is what I'm saying here. But kids getting that bigger perspective, and it's like, okay, so, you know, how can you be effective in your life? And like, I know that, and I hope we can talk about this at the show. If not, I'll take it out. But Sean, you've talked to kids about the importance of like doing their best and how sometimes the students don't always do their best. And then they come to you and you say, I didn't do my best. And now there's ramifications. Like now I got classes I didn't want because I didn't do as well as I could have, kind of thing.
I first of all, I'm speechless because Troy volunteered to do post. I don't know what to do with that information.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure I'm not going to have to do it though, because I think we can stay generic enough that.
Well, the thing is, if you've been with us for a long time, you know we don't do post. It's warts and all with us. So I can share this. A student came up to me. I tell the kids every year, I tell my seventh graders, because this is now the reality, right? You need to do well on your big cumulative test, like NWEA, iReady, the test like that. You need to do that because decisions are going to be made based on your scores on that test. And we teach seventh graders, and every year they don't listen to me because, you know, who am I? It's not like I've been teaching, you know, for 20 plus years. And so I had an eighth grader come up to me and she was looking very despondent. And she said, I blew up my iReady. I said, yeah. I said, I kind of expected her to, because that's her nature. That's her character. And I said, but why is that got you upset? She goes, well, they put me in all remedial classes. Now she's a bright kid. She doesn't need remedial classes. And she goes, they put me in all the remedial classes. And she goes, and now I have to live with that for next year. I said, well, at least mm-hmm. a semester. I said, but you need to make sure that you test out of that when you go to take your test. Now, that's a different test that she's going to take when she's in high school. It's not going to be the same. So it's not like comparing apples to apples here. It's going to be apples and kumquats. You know, something that's not even similar. So I told her, I said, you need to tell your relatives who are in my class, because she's got relatives in my class. And she goes, she looked at me like, kind of like, I'm going to tell them, but they're not going to listen. And so I followed up right away. And I said, you and I both know they're not going to listen. I said, but you need to tell them anyway. So that happened this week, right? Now we'll see if anything happens.
Yeah. So getting, but still getting kids the information about like, what is it people looking back want to remember? How should you live your life, kind of thing? So there's a whole bunch of really good ones with these. Acknowledge failure. That's hard for kids. That's hard for everybody. But that can be really hard for kids. But acknowledge failure and move on from that. Thank people sincerely. That's an important thing. Measure twice. Yes. Yeah. Yes, please.
Yes.
Humiliate no one. People see only those traits they possess. That's a great one to talk about as well. Brilliant people are wrong all the time. You know, that can lead to whole... Well, what about famous people? What about celebrities? Honor every religion. Tip well. Eschew rhetorical questions. They also have a swear word in here. Don't be a butt. They use the other word, but. So again, you want to read through these, but put together your own list. Have them put together a list, you know, go through some of this. And then after a while, it's like, well, what would you want to tell your, either your future self or kids coming up? So, and there's 101 of them. So you get a lot to start from. And there's actually a bonus one.
Ooh.
Yeah. Do not grow fascinated with people who dislike you. It is a universal of human nature that we project our insecurities onto what we cannot have including relationships and approval, hence elevating their perceived value. Hmm. So some good stuff there. I thought it was interesting, and I think it'd be interesting to share with kids as well. Oh, there was sports psychologist. Sometimes have really good tips, and this comes from University of Michigan, I think. University of Pennsylvania. And there are five tips, and I think it's, again, small habits that kids could benefit from, and a lot of times coming from somewhere else can give it a little more oomph. And for some segments of kids, if it's like, these are sports habits that you can apply to your regular world, it carries a little additional weight for it. So are you ready for the five?
Okay. I'm bracing myself right now.
Okay. Brace yourself. Number one, switch out the word but for and. And that can make a really important difference for kids. And I think that's something that there's variations of that teachers regularly put forward. It's also the first rule of improv, right? So number two, scenario plan. And this is one of those things that's really helpful for kids. Kids picturing the future, picturing what they're going to do, how they're going to do it, how they're going to plan for it, and all of that. As a quick tangent, apparently there is someone who charges buku bucks to essentially do this with people. If they're going to have to deliver bad news, they go through and they recreate the entire environment, and somebody pays for this, and they hire actors, and the person comes in and delivers the bad news to somebody like multiple times, like dozens and dozens of times, so that they can prepare for any reaction. I thought that's an interesting job. But scenario planning, and we know from sports that picturing yourself being successful, picturing what it looks like, what it feels like, is very valuable. Number three, you're going to love this one, Sean.
Okay.
Be on time.
I was today.
I'm not saying this about you. I'm just saying this, like, because I'm going to guess that some of your students don't arrive on time for everything every day.
Oh, no. No.
So be on time. And that has a lot to do with self-control and self-monitoring. So it's something intentional. Number four, call yourself out when you notice your mood is based on results. And for middle school kids, understanding your mood and what your mood is based on and not based on can be very powerful. Putting that into perspective can be very, very useful and helpful for kids as well. And then number five, and I think teachers do this one a lot, break large tasks down into steps. But teaching kids to do that and is, again, really powerful as well. So five tips that I think students specifically would benefit from as well. All right. Middleweb has put together, has reviewed a book called Chaos to Context, A Parent's Guide Through Middle Grades. And I know that you've done a lot of this in the past. You've put together like parent guides and parent works, right? But this is, and you were looking at creating a parent newsletter as well, right?
Yep, I'm thinking about doing some of that stuff, and to be very honest, I love all the work that Judith Bainan did in her Help for Parents stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You can't get it anymore, but I loved the work that she did. It's spot on.
So this is a book that you may want to have in your back pocket, so to speak, if parents are asking for help. It's by Jody Passanisisi. Sorry, Jody. But she acknowledges for parents that it is stressful, but there's several chapters, including, spoiler alert, it's puberty. Puberty's the problem.
Uh-huh.
Unveiling the adolescent brain, it's time for identity exploration, the changing social dynamics of middle school, the role of grown-ups in middle grades, academics in middle school, a new frontier, our collective challenge, technology, social media in the middle grades, good people who do good things, and the conclusion, from chaos to context. And, you know, they point out that growing up is not a linear process. It's hard to watch. Parenting is tough, but it is something that is very, it can be a nice, the book can be a nice resource for teachers, for parents. And Jody Passanisi also has an article that she wrote for middle grades, and you might find that useful as well. It's called Why It's Hard to Teach and Parent Middle Graders. So I'm going to link to that as well. You can check that out. Obviously not as complete and full as the book, but hey, it's there. I'm going to link kind of quickly to 7 graphic organizers to scaffold learning, to scaffold student learning by Barbara Blackburn. Just a reminder of the different graphic organizers that can help kids think, and you should have in your kind of in your back pocket as well, and kind of why you'd want to use them. And then, speaking of AI, here's one that Newsweek went ahead and they took their article, they took a Newsweek article, and they had ChatGPT rewrite it in Gen Alpha slang.
Oh.
So they start out with the context. What is Gen Alpha slang? And Gen Alpha were born between 2010 and 2025. So guess where some of them are right now. Unlike regular English, which adheres to conventional grammar and vocabulary and syntax, Gen Alpha slang is characterized by its fluidity, brevity, and heavy reliance on digital culture. So they give you a link to the May 12th article, which was originally entitled Donald Trump's Approval Rating Changes Direction. They give you what it came back with. It starts with Trump's clout kind of bouncing back, says new poll. Includes what's the tea, why it hits different. And it's become shorter than the kind of original, a little bit shorter, but just an interesting use and something that you could do with and the AI chatbot of your choice too.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Jonathan Fitzgerald is a college professor, and he wrote an article titled, I'm a College Writing Professor, Here's What AI Still Can't Do. And I'll give you the real underlying issue here is writing is about thinking and learning to think. And he's got kind of the layout of what AI has gone through, and he says he takes a collaborative approach to it because you're not going to just turn it off. Students are going to use it. And understanding why and what you're doing. And I go back to one of the articles we talked about last week, I think it was, about the student that was like, hey, look, I use ChatGPT for everything, and I'm here in college to meet my co-founder and spouse, basically. Have the discussion with students about what is the purpose of writing and why is writing happening. Okay. I think we have a couple of links to some other things that you might want to check out over at middleschoolmatters.com. And of course we have links where you can reach out to us. We would love it if you'd head over to the podcast catcher of your choice. Give us a 5-star rating. Tell us why Sean is the world's greatest co-show host. Share the show with your friends, with your enemies, with your leadership team. But we'd love to hear from you. So with that, this has been Middle School Matters for middle school educators who care. All opinions expressed on this podcast are exclusively the opinions of the host and guests and not indicative of any employer.